Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend, Dr. Russell Blaylock. And those of you who don't take the Blaylock letter really should. I take it and look forward to it coming every month. And we've been taking it for many years. And it simply goes into so many of the things having to do with medicine, the things that you can do to improve your own health. Because, of course, unfortunately, most doctors, I believe, are totally dedicated to helping you, but there is so much information that is not given to the doctors today. Why? Because it's an organized effort on the part of many of the pharmaceutical companies to withhold information so they can sell their exorbitantly priced drugs. And when you're talking about oral cancer drugs that cost you $1,500, $2,000 a month, And certainly, your people are already strapped as far as paying for it. Some of the intravenous drugs are even far more expensive than that. Why? And there are other things that can be done to help you as far as cancer is concerned, but you're not going to hear about that, and your doctors don't know about it. Well, this evening, Dr. Blaylock's going to be talking about, I believe, some things that can be done as far as congestive heart failure, but I'm going to let Dr. Blaylock tell you the story. Good evening, Russell. How are you?
Good evening.
Why don't you just pick the story up?
This is actually going to be the next two of my newsletters, the next 2 months, in two parts. And it's concerned with nutritional treatment of congestive heart failure. And the interesting thing about congestive heart failure is while there's a slight decrease in the number of deaths from heart attacks, which is about a million cases a year, with congestive heart failure, there's 5 million cases, and instead of going down, they're going up. And the death from congestive heart failure is also rising substantially. So we see that there's a major problem with one of the really large killers of the population in the United States. Now, we have 5 million cases of congestive heart failure a year, and Europe has 10 million cases. Brazil has about 5 million cases of congestive heart failure. So it's a worldwide problem. And interestingly, the Journal of the American Medical Association recently put out a study in which they found that only 11% of the cardiologists are practicing treating heart disease with scientifically based treatments. Most of them are just sort of doing things that they think will help and they're not sure, and there's no real good scientific studies to back it up. Well, actually, it's much worse than the article in the Journal of American Medical Association portrayed, because there's a whole group of treatments that are nutritional, that have a far greater impact on preventing death and disability from congestive heart failure that's being almost completely ignored.
Well, now, when you speak of 5 million cases, are you talking about cases or people who die of congestive heart failure?
It's 5 million cases of...
All right, the people under treatment then.
Excuse me?
The people that are under treatment for...
Right, people under treatment, okay. But... cardiovascular disease overall makes up 41% of all deaths in the United States each year.
All right, fine. You go right ahead.
So it's a huge segment of the serious disease in our country. Now, in a series of my newsletters, what I keep emphasizing to people is that most diseases...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. You were just saying that you were emphasizing that most diseases, pick the story.
Yeah, most diseases that we're looking at, the chronic diseases, the major diseases that are responsible for death and disability, are due to chronic inflammation, or related to chronic inflammation. Well, the interesting thing about heart failure, they're now finding that, in fact, that seems to be the major cause of at least the progression of congestive heart failure to the point of death or the need for a heart transplant. You know, the heart is a hollow muscle, and it works extremely hard. It pumps about 100,000 times in a 24-hour day. It's pumping 2,000 gallons of blood during that time. That's traveling through 60,000 miles of blood vessels. That's about 2.5 times around the Earth. So it's an organ that works extremely hard, and it never really rests. Even during diastole, it's not resting. So the heart has to constantly have a supply of oxygen. Its cells have to be healthy in order to be able to carry out this vital function constantly, because even the brain, which is we consider the person, it's not going to work very long if the heart can't supply it with blood and oxygen and its nutrients. So we see that the heart is at the center of life itself, because it's what keeps the rest of the human body alive. Well, when they started looking at people who had congestive heart failure, trying to figure out, well, what is the cause of this disorder? Well, we know there's a lot of related conditions. For instance, people who have hypertension, particularly uncontrolled hypertension, tend to go into heart failure. People who've had multiple heart attacks can go into heart failure. People with valvular disease in the heart, where the valves are not working properly, the heart has to work harder, and that tends to throw them into heart failure. But the actual etiology, what's actually causing the heart failure, has kind of escaped the medical profession and the research world until recently. And back in 1990, a physician got to looking at this and measuring various parameters, and he found out that people who have heart disease have a high level of an inflammatory chemical called tumor necrosis factor alpha, or TNF-alpha. And their level is about 10 times higher than a normal person's. And that as the disease progresses, the level of this inflammatory cytokine goes up even higher. And people who have the terminal...
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it's Dr. Russell Blaylock, simply talking about congestive heart failure, that most people who have congestive heart failure have an inflammatory change, something called a tumor necrosis factor, and there seems to be a direct relationship between the level of the tumor necrosis factor and the progression of the heart disease. Certainly, people who've had multiple heart attacks will get congestive heart failure. People who have a valvular disease will get congestive heart failure. People with hypertension will get congestive heart failure. But there seems to be this common factor, this tumor necrosis factor, that has been found to be directly related to the progression of the disease. And I can tell you that I'd already, of course, took care of many people during my years in medicine with congestive heart failure, but until my valve really got, aortic valve got so bad, I had congestive heart failure, and I suddenly realized, I can't lay down at night, I've got swelling in my legs, and fortunately, a truly miraculous improvement after I had my heart valve replaced, but certainly there is this problem with the possibility of recurrent congestive heart failure. So pick the story up there, Russell.
Well, when we... look at some of these early studies when they found this elevated inflammation in the heart, and that the progression of the disease is directly related independently to these measures of this inflammation. Then they started looking at, well, let's look at some of the other inflammatory markers. They looked at interleukin-6. It seemed to be an even better marker than tumor necrosis factor alpha. And then they looked at the highly sensitive C-reactive protein measure, which any doctor can do. And what they found is there's a very strong correlation between the rate of failure of that heart and whether you're going to end up needing a heart transplant and the level of that C-reactive protein. So then they were curious, well, is this just a reaction to the failure, or is this actually causing the failure? And so they injected animals with these different inflammatory chemicals and found out it could destroy the heart. It did destroy the muscle fibers and the conduction, electrical conduction system of the heart. So it not only seemed to be an indicator of heart failure, but it seemed to be causing, to a large degree, the progression of this heart failure. When they looked at people who were in the final stages of heart failure, these levels were astronomical, as much as 12-fold higher. And so as you're looking at this, you start thinking, well, what if we block these inflammatory chemicals? Will that help heart failure patients? Well, they used a drug that just blocks tumor necrosis factor alpha, and it didn't really do a whole lot. And the reason is because there's more inflammatory chemicals than just that one, and you really need to block them all. And so when they started doing some studies recently that attempted to block total inflammation in the heart, they began to see there was some significant improvement occurring. Then they looked at another avenue to see, well, why would all of this be triggered anyway? What's causing the inflammation? Well, two things really stood out. One of them was they noticed in people who are in stage 4 heart failure, that's the very end point, they have so much in backup of the blood, the venous blood, because the heart can't pump it, it's backing up. It engorges the vessels in the wall of the intestine, and that engorged blood doesn't transmit the food stuff very well, and the gut gets sort of leaky, so the bacteria in the colon begin to leak into the blood. That triggers an immune reaction and causes these inflammatory factors to rise very high levels. Well, they also discovered the heart itself can produce its own inflammatory chemicals. Well, the result of all these studies, then they started looking at, well, okay, we know the heart's inflamed. We know it's playing a major role in the progression of this heart failure. What can we do about it? Well, none of the drugs seem to have a big impact, but the ones we knew that did, like the digitalis drugs and the angiotensin blockers, when you looked at them, you found out, well, actually, they're anti-inflammatory drugs. And so it may be that the reason that they're having some effect is that they're reducing inflammation. And then as they began to look at the heart and that was under this type of stress, they said, well, the heart requires an enormous amount of energy. And so they looked at, well, what's the main fuel for the heart muscle? What food does it use? Well, it uses what we call long-chain fatty acids. That's your major fats in your blood. That's its primary fuel. And they looked at people with congestive failure and found out they really had an impairment of the ability of their hearts to produce energy. And the secondary fuel was glucose, and that it was impaired as well. The metabolism of both of those fuels were significantly impaired in heart failure. Well, we know that coenzyme Q10 is a part of the energy production in cells. It's one of the major key points of energy production. So the idea was let's feed coenzyme Q10 to people with heart failure and see if it helps. Well, so far over the last 20 years, they've studied over 1,000 heart failure patients through a number of studies in which they've done double-blind placebo-controlled studies. And what they found was virtually in every case, coenzyme Q10 at least improved the symptoms. That is, they were less short of breath. They could walk further without becoming exhausted. They were more independent, more exercise tolerant. And individual studies indicated that it was actually improving the strength of the heart muscle. The heart could pump better. It was pumping the blood better, what we call ejection fraction. And when they looked at the size of the heart on the x-rays, the heart was actually returning back more to a normal size.
Well, now, of course, one of the things about Lipitor and the statin drugs is it suppresses CoQ10, and since most people are not taking supplements, in many respects, then wouldn't the statins be doing more harm than good?
Well, and that was one of the observations early on in the statin drug controversy, was that because statins interfere with the formation of coenzyme Q10 in the body, the severe depletion in the heart not only would worsen congestive heart failure, but could actually bring it on. And there was a question, because of this last 20 years of use of statins, is this in fact why we're seeing a tremendous rise in the number of cases of congestive heart failure? And when you give people on statin drugs an extra supplemental coenzyme Q10, they get a lot better. Not only does their heart function better, they have more energy because the same CoQ10 is used in all the other muscles as well. Well, some of the interesting things they did in some of the individual studies was when they looked at people who were put on this CoQ10, not only did they get symptomatically better, but they changed their classification. Now, we use the New York Heart Association functional classification. And it's graded from grade 1, which is the minor form, all the way to grade 4, which is terminal heart failure. And they found that a large percentage of patients on CoQ10 improved at least one classification point. And some of them, about 1.8%, improved three classification points. That means they go from a class 4 terminal all the way to where they just had some shortness of breath, but were functional. So this was quite a dramatic improvement in heart function. Well, unfortunately, despite all these years of studying CoQ10, showing its benefit, using objective tests to prove it and quantify it, most cardiologists are still not using CoQ10 in their heart failure patients. And in fact, one study, they did only patients in class 4 that were only list for heart transplants. And what they found is those patients subjectively improved. They could walk further. They were less short of breath. They had less swelling. Even though their heart function and studies didn't change, they felt a lot better and had more energy, and their heart seemed to be working better. So if you could get that sort of improvement in a patient that's waiting for a heart transplant, the millions of other people certainly should benefit from coenzyme Q10. Now, another energy supplement they looked at was L-carnitine. Now, L-carnitine functions in the body in moving the long-chain fatty acids inside of the mitochondria and where it can be metabolized. Energy. So it made sense if long-chain fatty acids is the main fuel for the heart, the L-carnitine should improve their heart function. And so like the CoQ10, they did a lot of studies, and what they found out is most patients improve, and some improve quite significantly on various forms of L-carnitine. Well, the interesting thing about the heart is that L-carnitine is so important. It has its own special carnitine transporter, which means it draws the carnitine out of the blood and concentrates it in the heart. So the level of L-carnitine in the heart is much higher than it is in the blood because it's so essential to heart function. And when they looked at heart patients in failure, all of them had very low L-carnitine levels in their heart, just like they had very low CoQ10 levels in their heart. So the studies have consistently shown improvement not only in heart function, but also in one of the big killers in this disorder, and that's arrhythmias, abnormal heartbeats. So that it was quite potent in preventing the fatal arrhythmias in people with congestive heart failure.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russ Blaylock right here at Radio Liberty. All right, Russell, let's pick the story up. You've already talked about the advantages of CoQ10 and L-carnitine, and certainly, but, you know, certainly I don't think that the average cardiologists are using these products because they're not hearing about this. They're sold in health food stores, and that's the last thing the pharmaceutical companies want is, you know, certainly for people to be using things that are inexpensive. They'd much rather people were taking very expensive medications.
That's exactly right. And, you know, as we talk about evidence-based medicine, you always hear this term, and that's supposedly indicating that the ordinary physician in your towns are practicing medicine that is backed up by very hard science, a lot of studies, and that it's a very scientific practice of medicine. Yet all of these things I'm talking about have been reported in the major journals all over the world. These are very carefully done studies by well-known researchers in cardiovascular disease. The problem is the practicing physician is just not being told to use these things. And the advantage of things like CoQ10 and L-carnitine is they have almost no side effects. Now, all your major cardiac drugs have major side effects, and many of them can kill you. So we're talking about things that have almost no negative effects and all positive effects, and some are quite dramatic.
What about using magnesium to control the rhythm, control cardiac irritability? Is there a place for the standard use of magnesium in people that have auricular fibrillation or at least the potential for cardiac arrhythmia?
Yeah, it's one of the most important, and not just in the arrhythmia, but in the heart muscle strength. And magnesium reduces inflammation in the heart muscle as well as the rest of the body. When your magnesium is low, which is almost universal in heart patients, you know, most of the major studies they've done have shown that heart patients have some of the lowest magnesium levels, particularly if they're diabetic. And what that does, as you pointed out, it makes the heart muscle very irritable. So it tends to go into fibrillation and producing these fatal arrhythmias. When you raise the magnesium level in the body, oftentimes these arrhythmias disappear. And like I said, with L-carnitine, it's very potent at inhibiting arrhythmias. When you combine the two, you get a very potent effect at preventing these fatal arrhythmias. And most of the deaths that we see in heart attacks and many in congestive heart failure are due to arrhythmias. So anything that would reduce that would be very important. A lot of your drugs you use in cardiovascular practice deplete magnesium. Your diuretics, which are very commonly used in cardiac situations, severely depletes magnesium levels. Many of your cardiac drugs will also deplete magnesium. A number of other drugs used for other conditions, for hypertension, diabetes, severely deplete magnesium. So that is a major area that needs to be looked into. But almost no cardiologist until just recently was adding magnesium or using magnesium in their practice. The evidence is so overwhelming now, they're starting to use magnesium and recommend it to their patients.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Dr. Blaylock has talked about L-carnitine, the importance of coenzyme Q10, and then, of course, the importance of magnesium. Magnesium certainly tends to prevent cardiac arrhythmias, and most people are deficient in magnesium. Basically, most people who die of cardiac disease are dying of arrhythmias, and certainly magnesium is so vitally important in preventing the arrhythmias, the tachycardias that can really be lethal. And certainly only recently are at least a few of the cardiologists using this, although the importance of magnesium has been known for a long period of time. And I will tell you, my wife has me on all of the things so far that Russell is talking about, and I'm doing pretty well for 80 with had congestive heart failure, and I really have no symptoms of it at the present time. So go right ahead, Russell.
Another thing that was looked at that's very important is taurine. Taurine is an amino acid. It's what we call the one of the sulfur amino acids. And taurine has been shown to do a number of things that improve heart function. One, it regulates the amount of calcium in the heart muscle. And calcium is the major signaling molecule inside of the heart muscle. So that's a very important function, and it helps prevent arrhythmia as well. It's a powerful antioxidant. It's been shown to reduce the risk of atherosclerosis. It lowers blood pressure, and it improves the strength of the heart muscle. So it's doing a lot of things to improve the function of the heart in the cases of congestive heart failure. Many other things are finding a lot of use in congestive heart failure, like resveratrol, which is extracted from the skin of grapes. And this flavonoid has been shown in tests where they use animals to produce congestive heart failure and heart attacks, has been shown to significantly reduce the size of the damage to the heart by a heart attack, improve the ability of the heart to pump blood quite dramatically. Another is another part of the grape, and that's the grape seed. People take grape seed extract. It's called a proanthocyanidin. And when they tested it on the hearts of animals that were in heart failure, they found that the animals that they fed this grape seed extract to were quite resistant to the heart attack. So it protected the heart muscle very powerfully, and it's a powerful antioxidant is one of the ways that it works. Now, another one that's a big surprise was to a lot of people, but not to the person that's a researcher in heart disease, was pyruvate. Pyruvate is part of the chemicals that your body uses to create energy. When you eat glucose or carbohydrates and they're broken down to glucose, they're converted to pyruvate. Well, pyruvate is being shown to be one of the very powerful protectants of the heart muscle. It provides the heart muscle with a lot of energy, strengthens the heart muscle, reduces arrhythmias. When they tested it in animals who'd been given heart attacks, significantly protected the heart muscle against the damage of the heart attack. It strengthened the heart of the test subjects with congestive heart failure very dramatically, both in animal experiments and in humans. They saw a very significant improvement in heart function. And it's also interesting that the pyruvate helps prevent the leaky gut syndrome, where these bacteria flowing into the bloodstream, they tend to stop that activity. So that is another effect of pyruvate, which exceeded expectations. And another effect of the pyruvate is it lowered blood pressure. A lot of people who have congestive heart failure have very high blood pressure. The pyruvate tends to lower the blood pressure, as does both L-carnitine and coenzyme Q10. When you use them in combination plus magnesium, you get an even better effect at lowering blood pressure and easing some of that stress off of that heart muscle.
All right. Well, I guess this evening is Dr. Russ Blaylock. We're talking really about the treatment of congestive heart failure and the things that you can certainly take to help that. What about digitalis? Is there a place for digitalis, the treatment of congestive heart failure?
Yeah, digitalis has been an old standby for a long time, and basically what it does is improves the strength of the heart muscle. But the problem is if the heart muscle is filled with free radicals and doesn't have its energy, eventually it's going to wear out anyway, despite the digitalis. So the digitalis is just sort of a way to keep the heart beating until it completely wears out.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
God bless America.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. So go right ahead, and so basically digitalis then would be a supplement to all the things that you're talking about. What about LASIKs, things like that? Are they important?
Well, they're important for acute care. You know, if a person comes in and congestive heart failure and is extremely short of breath and going into complete failure, these things like the digitalis and the diuretics are necessary to save their life. Now, long-term use, as I pointed out with the magnesium example, can have some deleterious effects because if you're on diuretics, you're losing a lot of your magnesium, and that actually makes you progress a lot faster. Using the digitalis is like having a car that has dirty pistons and bad rings and a dirty carburetor. Well, if you just keep putting gas in it, it'll run, and you put higher octane gas, it'll run a little bit better, but you're wearing the engine out. You need to correct everything, and that's what's wrong with the heart, is the heart is being severely damaged by enormous numbers of free radicals. It's depleted in its energy. It can no longer make energy efficiently. It's damaging the proteins of the heart muscle and destroying heart muscle, and the electrical system of the heart's being damaged. So you got to do more than just make the heart work harder, and that's what digitalis does. You've got to repair some of these things. You need to reduce those free radicals. You need to supply the heart with energy. You need to protect its electrical system from excitotoxins. So these are the type of things I'm describing. Is all of these things do that. Coenzyme Q10, L-carnitine, taurine, and magnesium are all potent antioxidants. So they help protect that muscle. They supply it with more energy. They're doing all of these things we talk about. Now, the other thing you need to do is reduce stress. We know that stress plays a big role in congestive heart failure. And there's an interesting study they did on people with significant heart failure. They tried what is described as music therapy. And what they had them do is listen to some real soothing music once a week for 45 minutes for 10 weeks in a row. And what they found is that the patients who were listening to the music...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Russell is simply talking about what can be done to help the heart. And basically, he mentioned taurine. He's mentioned a number of things that can be used to try to get the heart working, to try to cut down the inflammatory cytokines, to try to, of course, help the electronic function of the heart. And certainly, as he mentions, digitalis will make the heart function better, but it's really not the solution because it's only treating the symptom and not the foundation of the disease. And the same thing with the diuretics. They're important, but they don't approach getting the heart back to where it should be and functioning normally, or as close to normal as you can get as you get older. Under any circumstances, before we go on, Russell, could you like to tell our listeners how they could get the Blaylock newsletter?
The best way to do it is go to my website, which is www.russellblaylockmd.com. RussellBlaylockMD.com, and you can get the newsletter through that. And it has some free information. I post some of the articles I've published on there that you can download, and a whole page of free information on various subjects.
Well, let me just say that I look forward to getting that newsletter every month when it comes. In fact, I make a copy for my wife. She wants to read it, so I read it. And so we keep them all filed away. We have them going back many years. A wonderful source of information. I enjoy it, and I think probably the listeners and the audience would. It's not that expensive. But I will tell you, it's just loaded with information that will help you as far as your health is concerned. So go right ahead, Russell.
Yeah, I was discussing reducing stress by using music therapy, and they divided these severe congestive heart failure patients into two groups. One listened to music and the other didn't, and they listened to music 45 minutes once a week for 10 weeks, and they measured various heart tests to make it objective. And what they found out is that the heart function in the people that were listening to music improved significantly, and they when they measured their interleukin 6, which is a measure of inflammation from the heart, it was significantly lower in the people who were listening to the music. And the number of hospitalizations for the congestive heart failure fell significantly in the people listening to the music. So here's something rather simple to do, is just spend 45 minutes listening to relaxing music, and you can significantly improve your heart function in that way as well. Now, one of the really impressive things I found in the study of congestive heart failure prevention as well as treatment was that there appears to be, from a number of studies, that the cause of the high rates of heart failure is vitamin D deficiency. They did some epidemiologic studies where they look at large populations of people during different seasons of the year, and they found out that during the wintertime, there's a lot more admissions. And so they measured their vitamin D levels and found out the people who had congestive heart failure consistently had the lowest vitamin D levels. And that if you looked at the scale of people with congestive heart failure, that is the grade 1 versus grade 4, the most severe, the people with the most severe heart disease had the lowest vitamin D level. And we've known for a long time that black people have the highest rates of congestive heart failure and the highest death rate from congestive heart failure. Well, ironically, they also have the lowest vitamin D level. So as we're looking at this at different ways, we're finding that vitamin D always seems to pop up in the equation. And so they've done a lot of really interesting studies in the vitamin D area to see exactly what this has to do with the heart. Well, vitamin D regulates inflammation. That's one of its main functions. It's a modulator of inflammation. So that as you have normal levels, higher levels, it tends to reduce inflammation all over your body. And it stimulates the production of certain chemicals like interleukin 10 that reduces inflammation. So if inflammation is the cause or the major reason that the heart fails, vitamin D would be expected to be high on the list of things to prevent that. And that's exactly what we seem to be finding, is that it is playing a major role. One of the studies...
Could I just ask you how much of vitamin D should people be taking a day, and would that be D3?
Well, it depends a lot on how much sun you're exposed to. It depends on your age, and it depends on the amount of pigmentation in your skin. Black people have to have 10 times as much sun exposure to produce the same amount of vitamin D as a light-skinned person. Now, in Africa, normally they were not wearing the clothes they wear here, so they were exposed to a lot of intense sun so they could maintain their vitamin D level. Well, as they in the United States wearing clothing, a lot living in northern latitudes, they're exposed to a considerably less amount of sunlight, and so they're not producing the vitamin D, and that's consistently what we're finding. When they measure the vitamin D in the black population, it's extremely low vitamin D levels, and it's playing a big role in congestive heart failure as well. And that those types of studies have been done in several places across the United States. One of the impressive studies of vitamin D found that not only did it reduce the heart attack, incidence of heart attack and congestive heart failure, but it also reduced the number of medications they need. So that they could start getting off some of the medications as their heart function improved on the vitamin D intake. Now, a normal person that's not in the sun a lot needs about 2,000 units of vitamin D3 a day. Vitamin D3 is the functional form of vitamin D. You can buy that as a supplement. It'll say D3 on it. If you're an older person, you're not exposed to the sun very much, you stay indoors mostly, you should probably take as much as 5,000 units a day.
Well, that's just what I do take, so go right ahead.
Right. And most people now are avoiding the sun, or if they go in the sun, they're using skin blockers. Well, that blocks the formation of vitamin D in the skin, which is the major source. You don't get a lot of vitamin D from your food. The amount you get from milk has almost no impact on your blood level of vitamin D3. So the government recommendations for vitamin D were far too low, and now they've admitted it and recommending much higher levels. So they're recommending at least 2,000 units for the average person. And in some cases, even I've recommended people take as much as 10,000 units. Now, as you get older, you have more difficulty making vitamin D, even if you're in the sun. Your ability to produce it declines. So they need extra vitamin D as well, even though they're in the sun. So this combination of the sun blockers, people staying indoors more, tends to dramatically lower vitamin D level. And it's estimated that at least 70% of the American population is deficient in vitamin D. And I would suspect that the level is probably a lot worse than that. That it's probably as much as 80 or 85% of the population is deficient in vitamin D. Another connection to vitamin D, it was shown that people who have very low vitamin D levels tend to produce calcification of their tissues. We've learned that if you have calcification of your arteries, that's a very bad prognosis for heart failure and for heart attacks. It puts you in a very high risk category. Well, there's a direct correlation between calcification of your arteries and your vitamin D level. So the people that are most deficient have the greatest calcification. People with normal calcium with vitamin D levels tend to have very little calcification in your arteries. So that's another indication that vitamin D is playing a major role in this problem. And I would suspect that probably the reason, or one of the reasons we're seeing such a high incidence of heart failure is the extreme degree of vitamin D deficiency in the United States and the obsession with avoiding sun rays and using skin blockers. Now, another cause of congestive heart failure has been shown is mercury. Mercury poisons the enzymes in the heart that are used to make energy, and it dramatically increases free radical generation in the heart. And they found that in heart failure patients, the amount of mercury is, I think the measure was 22,000 times normal levels or acceptable levels. So they have extremely high levels of mercury concentrated in their heart muscle. Well, what is the source of this mercury? Well, it's dental amalgam. It's vaccinations with mercury in it, like the flu vaccine the elders are getting every year. And it's mercury in the food, particularly the seafood, and mercury in the air, the atmosphere. Depending where you live and your diet, you may be consuming an enormous amount of mercury. So it would not be unusual for a person with heart failure to have extremely high mercury levels and have low vitamin D3 levels. And then, of course, they're going to be the worst case of all. Because they have severe poisoning of their heart muscle by the mercury, very high levels of free radical generation, impaired protective enzymes in their heart, impaired ability for their heart to produce energy, and the vitamin D is low, and that impairs the ability to resist the inflammation in the heart. And mercury is an inflammatory poison as well. People who have mercury in their system have high levels of inflammation. So all of these things are now starting to make a lot of sense, and they're all enhancing each other's findings.
I certainly, one of the things we've learned in the past is that the people over in Switzerland, the medical authorities there, will not pay for any mercury fillings. They know how toxic they are. And yet everything's been done to block that information here in the United States. Most of our dentists, you know, will simply laugh at you if you talk about, taking your mercury fillings out. And yet, of course, a group with the highest incidence of suicide in the United States, I understand, are dentists. Why? Because the toxic effect of mercury. They're working with it all the time. And certainly the dental assistants, a very high incidence, women, very high incidence of miscarriage because of the mercury toxicity. And we're constantly being poisoned by the mercury fillings we have in our mouths. And I think most people are totally unaware. I think it's such an important point.
Well, that's exactly right. And the other thing is this obsession with the flu vaccine every year. You know, you have a person that has congestive heart failure. Their doctors tell them, you need to take the flu vaccine every year because your heart's weak. Well, you're poisoning their heart with the flu vaccine two ways. One is you're injecting them with a full dose of mercury each year, which accumulates in their heart. And two is you're stimulating their immune system with powerful immune stimulators, which increases the inflammation in their body and increases inflammation in their heart. So, you know, the advice of getting a flu shot every year is probably the worst advice you give somebody with a heart failure or impending heart failure.
And yet, of course, the U.S. Public Health Service is doing everything they can to get people to take a vaccine that literally does no good, at least in most instances, absolutely no good, and a tremendous amount of harm. So why are they giving it to pregnant women and to a six-month-old children and giving it to children every year, you know, of their life, you know? And then, of course, giving it to the elderly where it does so much damage. We just have to ask, how could they be so foolish as to do that? But go right ahead.
Well, it's baffling. I mean, when you look at the science, you know, and they're always screaming, look at the science. Well, we're looking at the science, and the science says clearly, mercury is a very powerful poison for the brain and for the heart in particular, and that it accumulates in the brain and accumulates in the heart. Yet, as you say, we have dental amalgam. We've got vaccines full of mercury. They're even telling people to eat fish that is contaminated with mercury because the health benefits of the omega-3 fatty acids exceed the danger of the mercury, which is a lie. And then we've got atmospheric mercury. You know, for instance, in West Texas, has very high atmospheric mercury level. So if you're an elderly person living in West Texas, eating fish, getting vaccinated every year, and have dental amalgams, you're at an extreme high risk of having very severe heart failure. And I don't care how much digitalis or diuretics or other things you pump into that person, you're not going to make that heart improve its function. And this accounts for a lot of the resistant cases and rapidly advancing cases of heart failure.
What about the influence of fluoride, water fluoridation? I remember in the original studies back in the 1950s, they found a much higher level of heart disease, you know, in the communities that were with water fluoridation.
That's exactly right. I mean, some of the very large studies they did, I think one was in San Francisco, found a significantly higher level of heart disease with fluoridation of the drinking water, because fluoride, it makes sense, fluoride is a protoplasmic poison. It damages the enzymes that have to do with making energy. As we said, the heart never rests. It's one of the most energy, that and the brain are the two most energy-dependent organs in the body. And so here you're supplying these people with a poison to their enzymes. Well, it makes no sense. You know, none of this stuff makes any scientific sense to say, well, you need these mercury amalgams in your mouth. We know it forms a vapor and you absorb it and it's in your tissues, but it's inexpensive. And here, take this vaccine. Well, we know it doesn't work. but take it anyway. It's got a good load of mercury in it. You know, it's absurd. It's against the science.
Well, unfortunately, the average doctor isn't told that. He's just told how important it is. If you care about your patients, try to get them to take the influenza vaccine. And, well, I hate to suggest there's something diabolical element, but if there isn't a diabolical element, this will do until it comes along. Our guest is, of course, Dr. Russell Blaylock. We do hope that many of you will want to get this talk. I think it's vitally important. And, of course, let me recommend once again the Blaylock Medical Newsletter. We recommend it because we really believe in it. And, of course, Russell is a friend. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up our program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. I hate to interfere there, but I just have a couple of questions I wanted to ask because I think they're so important. Go right ahead, though.
Oh, I'm glad you did. You made some very good points. And the lesson to learn here is that you're going to have to take care of your health to a great degree by yourself. You're going to have to study these things, look at the evidence, and make your own decisions. Now, your diet makes all the difference in your health. That's the foundation. Everything else is secondary to that. There are certain supplements that can dramatically improve your health, particularly in congestive heart failure. There are many toxins that you have to avoid, the fluoride, the mercury, the cadmium, the lead. Those have to be avoided, the pesticides, the herbicides. All these poisons have to be avoided as much as possible. If you do that, exercise regularly, pray regularly, rest, get a full night's rest, your risk of dying of congestive heart failure is extremely low. And that's the lesson. Now, your physician is not going to do a lot of these things, so you have to do them for yourself. Fortunately, we can do that now until they outlaw supplements. I would suggest that you start looking into this and take care of your own health.
Well, I think that's really such good advice, and I think people really have to spend time actually doing the research. Of course, fortunately, my wife puts out all the vitamins for me. She takes the information from your newsletters and of course, from the programs we've had. And I'm taking just about everything that you had listed here. In fact, we actually carry a lot of these things. We think they're vitally important. So anyway, Russell, thank you so much for being with us. And we're really looking forward to having you and your wife. Will your wife be coming with you in October when you come for our conference?
Oh, yeah.
All right, fine. Well, we'll look forward to seeing both of you then in October.
Well, we thank you. We look forward to it, Stan.
God bless, and thank you so very much. And bye-bye. And, of course, this is Dr. Stan. I do hope that you've enjoyed our program with Russell Blaylock. There's a tremendous amount of information here, information that you really need to get. Of course, the federal government now has mandated that you have your mercury light bulbs. Don't ever drop one of those mercury light bulbs, which incidentally are made in China. They did that, of course, to destroy the electric light bulb, certainly the industry here in the United States. But those mercury light bulbs now, these fluorescent night globes that everybody's using, loaded with mercury, and if you ever drop them, why, of course, you could get mercury intoxication. Why would they do that when the incandescent light bulbs work just very well? Well, they tell us these other mercury light bulbs last forever, and they don't. They wear out much sooner than the regular light bulbs. Thanks for Washington, D.C., for helping us. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we do hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Blaylock. If you'd like to get copies of it, tape or CD of it, why they are available through Radio Liberty. Now, I just want to mention we do carry the health products. In fact, I take most of these products myself. But we carry the coenzyme Q10 that's so important, the L-carnitine. We actually, of course, we have the vitamin D3, and we have it in 1,000 a unit or in 5,000 units. We think these things are important. And, of course, we actually have magnesium, and I take that. I'm going to take that every evening. And, of course, you want to, because it, of course, prevents a cardiac irregularity. And most people are deficient in magnesium, and very, very few people really understand. So I'd suggest if you're out there in the listening audience, get a copy of this tape. And then if you want to get any of these products, the coenzyme Q10, the magnesium, the L-carnitine, vitamin D. We carry all of those, and I'm not sure whether we carry the taurine or not. If you're interested in music, we have some of the most wonderful CDs. We carry them because we really love the music. It's done by a man. He's passed away now, but his name is Newell Oler. I walked into a novelty store one day, maybe 10 years ago, and there was music playing in the background, and I was so taken with it. It was piano music, soft and really, of course, but really got your attention, really music like I hadn't heard before on a piano. And eventually, of course, we got all of Newell Oler's CDs, and then we went down and visited Newell in Texas before he passed away, had a wonderful time with him. But we carry his CDs. They're inexpensive, but a wonderful and restful music. So we've got just about everything that that Russell was talking about. Now, we do carry Russell's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We think it's vitally important. We have his book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And then we have his book on natural strategies for cancer patients. And if you know somebody who's going into cancer therapy, they have to have this book, because it can certainly be used as a supplement to traditional therapy. And you see the people who get the chemotherapy, their hair falls out, they're deathly ill. And the cancer specialist can't figure out why the people who are following Russell's recommendations don't have the terrible reaction to the chemotherapy. That's natural strategies for cancer patients. And then, of course, we have a 4-tape set, Life-Saving Secrets, and my interviews with Dr. Blaylock in the past. A great new DVD that Dr. Blaylock's talk. Now, you can get it either on CD or on a DVD. We've just finished it now. It's called Vaccines and Brain Development. Vaccines and Brain Development. And if you have children or grandchildren, and of course they believe that you have to take the vaccines to keep from dying, why you need to get this DVD, you need to get our 4-tape set on Vaccine Update 2009. That's the 4-CD set, Vaccine Update 2009. You need to get Neil Miller's wonderful book, Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? That's Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? His book on autism. And then Neil Miller has written a 500-page book, The Vaccine Safety Manual. That's the Vaccine Safety Manual, with a foreword by Dr. Russell Blaylock. So we do hope that many of you out there will want to go ahead and get that. And if you want to get in touch with us, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I would simply point out that I enjoy having Russell Blaylock because I learn a lot from him. And, of course, I learn a lot from reading his newsletter, but I feel it's a privilege to be able to present him to the listening audience out there. And Russell, I've known long before he ever retired from medicine. I've known him for, I can't remember how long, but an awful long time. He's a wonderful man. He loves the Lord, and he spends full time doing the research that most people don't have the time to do, and doing a great job helping people to understand what's going on today. So again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Go there. You can listen to us on the internet 9 hours a day. And then please, please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour at Radio Liberty.